Good morning, Tucson. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studio. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, here for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. And it is good to be back in the saddle, as they say. Good to be with you again today. I had two good feelings last week. One was I had a great team able to back me up here in studio, get some time away with the family, and kind of take a little bit of a pause last week. I was off the whole week away from the studio here as we gear up for election 2020, the primary results tomorrow, the general in the fall. It felt like a good time to just kind of take a little bit of a break away. So that was good feeling number one. Good feeling number two was that about halfway through the week, I had this thought of, man, I miss being in studio. No lie, I missed getting in here and getting in the seat and chatting with you and talking again about the people, ideas, and issues shaping our region. And the feeling that came from that was, you know what? Not that this was ever in doubt, but it was just a good affirmation. I love what I do. I love to get to sit here and be with you. So it is good to be back. And it is good that you didn't miss me too much last week. I thought we had a great team that did a really good job filling in. I want to thank Louie. I want to thank Dan. I want to thank Ben Bueller-Garcia. I want to thank Eric Smith for standing in. And I resisted the temptation for the most part to listen back to the shows. I will this week. I only resisted because I wanted to kind of, you know, take some time away last week. And so I'm going to listen back to most of them, but I got to listen to a little bit last week. And again, just really appreciated four really good dudes standing in and delivering some great content here on Tipping Point. So again, Louie, Dan, Ben, Eric, if you're listening, thank you so much. But I have been looking forward to this week for a few days now because this is election week. And I'm a little bit of a political wonk. I actually enjoy the whole process of watching it and debating it and all that good stuff. And so this week it feels like the playoffs. Not quite the Super Bowl, that's in the fall, but this is kind of like the playoffs. And so again, for about a year now, 6 months, have had a lot of conversations with candidates. And we've committed on Tipping Point to do local candidates, state candidates, federal candidates. Everybody's on the table this week. And so we're going to finally get to see not just where my head's at, where your head's at, where the candidates' heads are at, but to hear kind of what the community is thinking. So just in the ways of saying hello and getting back in the saddle here, we'll get into our Monday show here in a minute. But I do want you to make a plan to stick with us throughout the week here. Tomorrow looks like I'm going to get to hang out with Dylan Smith for the hour. He is the editor and founder and all that good stuff for the Tucson Sentinel. And he and I are going to get together at 9 o'clock tomorrow, same time, same place, before the, you know, polls close and all that. And we're going to do our final predictions, our final thoughts on this primary election season. We'll look at a few of the key races, talk about some of the dynamics and what we think is going to happen. And then I am in conversation, very grateful for their time to even shoot me an email back, David Eppenheimer and Allison Jones. They are the chairs of the county parties, the Republican Party and Democratic Party, respectively. Look to have them on. I'm shooting for Friday to do basically a recap and look at some of the key races on the other side of the election, and start to look at the general election ahead. What can we expect? So this whole week is kind of around, what do we think is going to happen? What did happen? Where do we go from here? So I would love to have you on board for the entire week. All right, let's get into the show. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to give a call in and chat. A few things I'm kind of thinking about today as almost a theme of while I was gone, consumed a little bit less news while I was gone. That was probably the biggest part of the vacation, was getting to tune the news brain off a little bit. As you can imagine, that's a break in and of itself. But I'm naming today kind of while I was gone, while we were gone, however you want to call it, some things that have popped up in the news that I think are notable that I want to talk about just to kind of cue us up here. I want to talk about the free Wi-Fi coming to Tucson, and I want to pat you and I on the shoulder, on the back on that, because we've been talking about how the city of Tucson could use CARES dollars to expand Wi-Fi access and some other things. We'll talk about that as well. That did happen last week. Some interesting dynamics around that as well. Also want to talk about the University of Arizona getting into online education in a big way. They looked up in March and went, hey, we need to get in on this online education thing. And they did, and it follows Purdue, it follows Arizona State University. We'll talk about that. And then in the third or fourth segment, I want to get your gears turning. I've been thinking about the last couple of days, just watching kind of some of the pivots and some of the things that the Trump reelection campaign is doing. Is what is the state of the suburban vote? And I want your thoughts on this. This is going to be less of me telling you. I'll certainly share my thoughts, but I love your thought. I love your feedback on the suburban vote. President Trump is making a huge play, a very unsubtle play for what he believes is on the mind of the suburban vote. And I'm not sure that it's up to date. And I'm not sure if it's going to work the way that he thinks it's going to work. But I want your thoughts on that. It's an open phone line conversation, 790-2040. Let's go to our first break of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk Wi-Fi in the city. We'll talk University of Arizona. We'll talk other issues and items of the day while we were gone that are shaping Tucson and the future of our region, as we always do here on Tipping Point. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back.
We're the place where Tucson comes to talk. 1030, The Voice.
The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
T Tucson, welcome on back in. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. You're listening to Tipping Point again today. First day back after a few days away from the studio, and boy, I'm happy to be back in this seat. 790-2040 is your opportunity to give us a call and have a chat. We're calling this hour While I Was Gone. A few things that either came up on the radar or happened over the weekend that I want to talk about today, as we do every day, talking about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I want to talk about what I would agree with Steve Kozacik on in his recent newsletter. He calls it More Good News, Expanding Wi-Fi. And I want to first say that, and I'm focusing on the win that this is for the city, right? This is not pointed back to me. But if you listen to this show even once or twice a week, you've probably heard me talk about over the last couple months this idea that, look, we know that our Wi-Fi, our broadband, and our fiber infrastructure, right? All of these kind of internet broadband capacity issues that we know Tucson's behind on. We know our community in many regards needs it or needs more of it. We know that, you know, entrepreneurs and businesses who are looking to communities to land, when you say, you know, what do you want out of a community to call it home? The surprising answer from entrepreneurs has been, we want the infrastructure to be right, which means roads, which means parks, which means all that stuff. But it also means high-speed internet, fiber, the ability to grow in that sense. We've seen a lot of small and mid-sized cities around the country over the past decade or so grow and scale because, again, their fiber, their internet, their broadband was up to the new par, the 21st century par. And so if you remember earlier on this year, I said, wow, you know, the city, I think it's $94 or $96 million. I always confuse which one it is off the top of my head, but it's around there. It's almost $100 million that the city of Tucson got from the CARES Act, those federal dollars. And the string attached to the funding, as many of us know at this point, as it's come up in many council meetings, is the city can't go, oh, we're going to lose, you know, I don't know, $50 million, whatever the number is, $56 million potentially from revenue loss, from sales tax revenue loss. The federal government said the only thing really you can't do with the money is basically backfill your revenue loss. So you can't take the money and put it in the coffers to make up for sales tax revenue. You have to use the money creatively. And so, you know, as many of you know, this show, when it became, was a weekend show almost 3 years ago, started out as the Creative City Show. So when I hear the word creativity, my ears perk up. And I thought, you know what? We need this infrastructure developed. And if you needed an excuse, right, if you needed to get a pass with the feds on this, you could say, hey, we got a lot of kids in March and April that aren't in school anymore. They need to finish school online. We don't have a lot of access in the city. Why don't we use money from the CARES Act to basically lay the infrastructure or expand on the infrastructure that we have? It meets a need today. It lays the groundwork for growth in the future. To me, it seemed brilliant. And I wondered why I wasn't hearing about it. I wondered why it wasn't happening. I wondered why, you know, to a large extent, I think there was two ways to go on this. You could either hold on to a lot of the money and just try to hold on until coronavirus leaves and we figure out what the future looks like, or you take an educated bet and you lay the groundwork, in this case, literally, for the future. And I felt along the way that for the most part, and it's not a criticism, this is objectivity, from the outside looking in, I think the city of Tucson, I'm speaking of the city of Tucson specifically because that's the story specifically, it has been playing it very safe. It has not been either creative or has executed on the creativity. You know, I remember the last council meeting I watched, Councilman Paul Cunningham had this great plan for testing and tracing in the city. I mean, the city was going to be the leader on this. He put the plan out and it wasn't executed on. And it was very interesting to see his frustration on the air, so to speak, on the last city council meeting I watched, a couple city council meetings ago. Basically, look, the county has already done this, right? The city of Tucson, you had your shot. You could have been the leader on this. I thought Councilman Cunningham had a great plan. He put the plan out, wasn't executed on. I don't know whose fault it is. I really don't. So I'm not going to say or make an assumption. But it wasn't executed on. And so then the conversation came, well, will the city do it or will the county do it? The county's already doing it. Support the county. So it things like that where the city's been kind of slow, or there's been a little bit of a lack of creativity or a bit of a lack of execution. So all that to say, when I saw this piece in the news last week, I got really excited because the IT department, again, as Steve Kozacik explains it in his newsletter, which, by the way, is a really great blow-by-blow. You may not agree with all of it, and that's there's probably stuff to not agree with it, but it's a great blow-by-blow in his mind of what's happening in the city right now. You can go to TucsonAZ.gov, find Steve K's newsletter. I think it's the most comprehensive in the city, and I learn a lot from it. The IT department basically proposed to the council last week to spend approximately $9 million of CARES Act money into a two-pronged approach to providing internet access citywide, unquote. Now, this is not municipal internet, which is basically this idea of everywhere around the city, all the public spaces around the city have free Wi-Fi. You know, like when I visited Europe, you know, a few years ago, the good times before COVID-19. A few years ago, you know, you go in a park, you open your phone, you have free Wi-Fi, right? So that's municipal Wi-Fi. This is not that. This is a beta at this point of using some existing infrastructure to basically provide access to internet in homes and residences that don't have it. But Steve K put in here a map of basically light to dark where there is compromised access, right? Either there's no service being offered or families can't afford it. And it should surprise no one, that most of the city is a dark color. It basically, if you want to see where there is uncompromised internet access in our town, go to Ward 4, go to Ward 2, barely, and some strips along Silver Barrel in Ward 1, and a little bit in Fimbres' district in 5. Other than that, the internet here, in diplomatic terms, sucks. and it makes sense. We're a poor community. We've been a poor community for a long time. There's not a plan in place to make us an unpoor community. But this is needed. This is groundwork for the future. $9 million of CARES Act will go into a two-pronged approach to providing internet access across the city wide. This was a vote that Paul, Nikki, and Steve Kozacik, they were three of the four who voted for this. Interestingly enough, Mayor Romero and Councilwoman Lane Santa Cruz of Ward 1 voted against it, in their words, because they had only seen the plan that day. Steve Kozacik disagrees. I don't know. I'm not going to get into the palace drama, but it was interesting that Ward 1 is a district where access is poor to internet, and this is needed for the community, as we have kids whose parents can afford to and have the capacity to, many will be staying home and doing online learning rather than being in class. I think for me, I guess this is the brass tacks. This is the exciting news. But I would have liked to have seen something a little bit more bold. I think $9 million compared to the 95, you know, that's about 10%. That's not bad. That's exciting. That's good. I would have liked to have seen more. And because this is something where, again, as I started this segment, you need it for some of those areas that have limited access, right? Our education and way of doing it is changing. The way the world is requires internet. It's really hard to get by without it. There's that piece. How do you fill the gap that exists? But in terms of encouraging businesses, entrepreneurs, companies, that Tucson is a place that has the infrastructure to grow, this is a biggie. And this has been a missing gap. And I think that this is really, really exciting. So The other thing that Steve Kay talks about, and we've talked all about it on this show as well, is that once this infrastructure is in place or expanded upon, then we can start looking at smart city stuff, right? And he talks about it, for example, reducing idling at stoplights, basically be able to better time our stop and starts on our roads, right? Why does it take 30 minutes to get from Oro Valley to downtown Tucson? It shouldn't be that way. In most average 21st century cities, it's not. But in Tucson, it is. So this is all a piece of that, all really exciting. I think it serves two needs. It serves those who are underserved, and it lays the groundwork for, again, businesses and entrepreneurs and folks who may be looking at Tucson as a place to call home. We do know that a lot of companies are still planning to make moves in 2021. So Tucson is... a hot spot on the map, is a city, is a community that fits what site selectors are looking at. And site selectors who are putting large companies on the ground are looking to make moves in 2021. So this is really important stuff. This needed to be done. I'm glad that it's done. Again, this will be using, you know, kind of some building on existing infrastructure that has been laid in our community to basically provide Wi-Fi access in certain parts. And these will be... some of the first will be, and again, this is from Steve Kay's newsletter. There's a lot of news articles out about it, but I like his newsletter. Mission Manor Park, Menlo Park, from which I hail. There's no Homerism here, though. I'm not talking about this story because it's in my home neighborhood, but it's cool. I actually found that out this morning, by the way. I didn't know that before. Freedom Park and Jesse Owens Park areas. So very cool stuff. Very cool stuff there. These are the kind of things that Tucson needs to be thinking about. I just think it should have been thought about in March or April. And in terms of an equity thing, this is equity, right? I think what confuses me, other than not being able to get the information soon enough in time, is that the mayor and Ward 1 councilwoman have been pushing a budget, have been working with the council to define a budget that is focused on equity. There's nothing more inequitable than this map that I'm looking at right now, where most of the city doesn't have adequate internet service. When we're talking about equity, when we talk about opportunity, this checks both of those boxes. And so I'm still scratching my head to figure out kind of what happened there. But while we were gone, good stuff there. When we come back, I want to talk about the University of Arizona, a big move. It was actually in the Wall Street Journal. And I'm not knocking anybody, but the Wall Street Journal was a much better write-up than even the local news. I read the local news, but a friend posted the Wall Street Journal article about the University of Arizona basically purchasing an online education platform that basically 8Xs, we'll say 6Xs, its current online student base, 6Xs it overnight. Big play the University of Arizona just made for online education. We'll talk about why. We'll talk about what that looks like and what it means when we come back from bottom of the hour news. The suburban vote fall to Trump in the same way that it did in 2016. I want your thoughts on this, and I'll tell you what I'm thinking. 790-2040. That'll be the end of our show. Don't go away, Tucson. We'll be right back.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. WhyILoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyILoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, good morning. Welcome back here after the bottom of the hour news and sponsor messages. Glad to be back with you. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Had the week off last week. If you just joined us, I want to again thank the guest hosts who kept the show going, delivered some great news and content and stories to you last week. Greatly appreciate that. And also wanted to take this real quick moment before we jump into our story about the University of Arizona jumping in a big way, at least for the University of Arizona, into online education. I do want to mention and appreciate the fact that we have some amazing sponsors who not only share in the vision and passion of this show for Tucson, but I'm also passionate about their success and the business ecosystem. I think in this time where we are all trying to get through COVID-19 together, supporting our local businesses is more important than it ever has been. And it was really important before. But I just want to run through a few here. Again, if you have air conditioning needs, we really appreciate the support of Ultra Air Conditioning. The Talent Store is our thought leader on workforce retention and attraction. Moving Your Money Local. Vantage West Credit Union is a supporter of this show. Tech Parks Arizona, catalyzing innovation. Why I Love Where I Live. Gifts for family and friends. Our coffee provider on this show specifically, Decibel Coffee Works. Jason Robinson, his team at MassMutual, financial planning needs. Welcoming on this month, Jones Photo, the photo and framing needs if you have them. Jones Photo. HR Resolve has been a longtime business administration services supporter of this show. Tucson Museum of Art and Historic Block and Hope City Church. Just had this moment over the weekend where I put all them together and I went, wow, it's incredible. Even 11 members of the Tipping Point family, small businesses that take care of you and support this show. Nothing would make me happier than if you support them and help make sure that their business succeeds. I will probably not do that again for the rest of the year. This is a very special occasion. I just want to let you know these are the guys and gals that make the magic work on this program. The show would not exist. I tell you that. I guarantee you that. The show would not exist. It'd go off the air tomorrow if these businesses and organizations and institutions weren't helping make it happen. So we thank them. We thank them a lot. All right. So this story came out 7 a.m. Eastern Time today, August the 3rd, Monday. The University of Arizona to acquire Ashford University in online push. This is a Wall Street Journal article. Again, shout out to my friend on social media who posted it. It is in online local news. There is some local news coverage of it. But I thought the Wall Street Journal did the best overview that I saw yet, and so that's the one that I'm referring to. This is the brass tacks news item. The University of Arizona is acquiring the assets of for-profit college Ashford University from a company called Zovio Inc., reports the Wall Street Journal, in an effort to establish itself as a major competitor in online education and attract more working adult students domestically and abroad. And not to bore you with the details, but basically the U of A will buy Ashford's assets for a buck, that's right, a dollar, and then sign a long-term contract with Zovio Inc. to provide education technology services. Zovio gets a little less than 20% of the revenue, known as the University of Arizona Global Campus, and will be reimbursed for costs associated with running the online school. Global Campus will get $225 million in guaranteed revenue over 15 years, including a $37.5 million upfront payment from Zovio. And I thought Wall Street Journal, the part that they really clarified here that I didn't see in local news, and if I missed it, forgive me, is that basically it's similar to what Purdue University did with Kaplan University. I don't know if anybody remembers that back in 2017, but they did absolutely pretty much the same thing. Here's the interesting part, and there's an in-state university story here that I want to talk about, but here's one of the interesting lines. The Arizona Zovio deal developed against the backdrop of an upheaval in higher education, with the coronavirus pandemic hastening a shift for schools to provide more robust online offerings. Schools that rely on traditional age students are also bracing for a drop in enrollment for those straight out of high school because of lower birth rates. And so making inroads with working adults has become a more crucial path for revenue growth. Yes, there is a baby crunch, right? If you're listening, you're the baby boom generation. My generation is the baby crunch generation. We're not having as many babies. It's going to be interesting to watch. Higher education is changing, said University of Arizona President Robert Robbins, adding that the deal was an opportunity to expand the school's reach in both domestic and global markets. This blew my mind. This blew my mind. I need to check on this number. I should have checked on this with my ASU colleagues in the city. But the university reports, Wall Street Journal, the University of Arizona has 4,200 online students right now. They will absorb Ashford's, this university they're buying, roughly 35,000 students. Now, for comparison, ASU, Arizona State University, has 60,000 online students, right? And I think what's interesting to me on this is back when I was in the college age bracket, you know, ASU was this party school. You know, you went there to play. It accepted everybody. You needed a 2.5 GPA to get in. They accepted just about everybody. Well, what people didn't know is that that was not a land grab. That was a strategy. Right, about 10 years ago, I would say, and that's a rough estimate, ASU began building off of President Michael Crow's idea about education, that it wasn't about your exclusivity, it was about your top of funnel. In other words, innovation, funding, the new era of economic of education was not based on how many you could exclude from education, it was how many you could include. Right. And so I think a lot of people looked at him and went, this is not how education is done. This is silly. You're the second or first largest university in the country. You and Ohio State go back and forth. And ASU, I remember 10 years ago, doubling down. Absolutely. 10 or 15 years ago, doubling down on online education. And I think they got made fun of for it a lot. Well, the joke's now on everybody else, because not only did ASU double down on online before it was cool, because now it's really cool, but ASU has also been doing this thing of, hey, like, we can't just depend on the 18-year-old freshman to fund our education model for the next 50 years. It's not happening. ASU has, if you've been watching carefully, or even not so carefully, because they've been pretty out and about it here in the state, of basically saying, look, we want to create an education model where if you are 45 and need to go back to school, we're here for you. If you're 35, you need to go back for a degree, we're here for you. And I think for a long time, and this is not true across the board, but I think for a long time, as evidenced by the numbers, I think the University of Arizona double down on some of the traditional models. Now, it's an amazing land-grant university. The other thing I'll talk about soon is how U of A had an innovation year on par, in my mind, with ASU, the most innovative university in the country. And that's not me saying that. That's other people saying it. U of A had an incredible innovation year when it comes to taking great ideas out of the classroom and commercializing them out into the market, making money off of it. The U of A is on the right path. An amazing year, right? So a lot of good things happening. But I think what the coronavirus pandemic did was basically push U of A into the 21st century. I'll just put it that way. And I think that's a good thing. And back in March, as I come to understand, this deal with Zovio started to happen. There was an acquisition strategy put in place, and it is now announced, at least to the national public, today. And what's interesting is that Purdue, back in 2017, received pushback on its agreement with Kaplan, particularly from faculty. And Dr. Robbins said in this Wall Street Journal article, he's already getting ready for there to be pushback at the University of Arizona level due to how for-profit colleges have a negative stigma in many circles. But I think if the U of A was to follow in ASU's footsteps when it comes to the enterprise model, right? Arizona State University won out of coronavirus. And I'll tell you why. Not only did they have the greatest number of students, right? ASU got federal money like you wouldn't believe because of the number of students and the number of Pell students, right? So remember I said ASU said the top of funnel is where we're focusing. We want as many people as possible. That's how we create innovation. Innovation's been the buzzword on campus for a long time. So previous to coronavirus, ASU welcomed in more students. They built their online program, and they figured out how to use real estate to fund education. Three areas I think if the U of A was to follow in, they'd be better for it. And I think we're starting to see some examples. And in this Wall Street Journal article and in local articles, Bobby Robbins is very complimentary of some of the stuff that now we see ASU was 10 years ahead of its time, 15 years ahead of its time on. We know that now, but we didn't know that then. So the model is clear. And I think if I was to grab anything from this story, and there's a lot of detail I could get into, but I think this demonstrates how our state of Arizona has some very innovative universities. I think one of them is better positioned to really thrive through coronavirus. That's Arizona State University. We're seeing some competition between the two universities diminish. We're seeing presidential leadership at the University of Arizona be willing to learn from our neighbors to the north. I think it's a good thing. And I think that if I have any concerns, it would be to this day that I think President Robbins, under the surface, has a lot of innovations he'd like to make. My fear is he will be held back. He will be held back by faculty. He will be held back by campus culture. He will be held back, and it's going to take a lot of things over a long period of time to move the university where COVID is showing us it needs to move faster and it needs to move better. So I'm encouraged by this story. I think it's interesting. Again, this will push online education up to, I think, about 40,000 students overnight. I'm air quoting. John can see I'm air quoting because it won't be overnight. But to go from 4,000 to about 40,000 is a huge jump. I applaud the University of Arizona for jumping on it this quickly back in the spring because I think it's necessary. And education, higher education as we know it, is on a dinosaur trajectory. And we got to move. We got to pivot. And we'll see if our region and our universities does that. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts. This is a call-in segment, 790-2040. We're seeing, I want to shift to our national election scene because we commit to you to do that throughout election year 2020. I want to get your thoughts on the president's suburban strategy. We are seeing his 2020 suburban strategy take shape, and I want to get your thoughts on whether you think it will work or not. I'll share some details of what's in my head. And we'll take a look at the president's side of things. We talked a lot about Joe Biden's side of things. We'll talk about it more. Will the president's suburban strategy work this time around? We'll talk about that and more when we come back here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started.
I'm Steve, and I'm the manager at Jones Photo. The company's been around since 1947, so we've been in Tucson a long time. The services we offer for our customers are film developing, prints of any size. We work with film, we work with transparencies, we work with digital files, just about anything that you can make a print from. Our goal in servicing our clients is always to produce the best work possible.
Jones Photo, 520-327-9521.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back. Happy Monday to you, August the 3rd. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Once again, last time of this hour, want to thank the folks who stood in for me last week here in studio, got a chance to spend a little time with family. And now today's hour, I've called While I Was Gone, or While We Were Gone, however you want to join in on that. Looking at a couple of stories that I think are really important for our city, for our region. And those two have been looking at the new city council voted plan to increase Wi-Fi access in underserved parts of our community. And when I say underserved, I really mean most of the city. It's a little bit more a little bit more detailed than that. But most of our city does not have quality access to Wi-Fi. And so talked about that story. Which should be in place. I think the betas are going to be in place November. So there's a few key areas. And then that will be expanded by December. And of course, that timeline is really based on when we have to spend in the city federal CARES Act dollars. We have to spend it through December or by December. And so there's that aspect there. Then we talked about the University of Arizona. It came out in national news in a big way today. The University of Arizona making a huge play for online education, buying a online university, adding about 35,000 online students. So if you missed any of that, go back to our podcast. You can listen back to our daily podcasts, kvy.com/podcast. You can go to Google Play Music. You can go to iTunes. You can catch up on whatever that you missed. So time is ticking. It ticks fast as it always does around here. 790-2040. And I just wanted to hit on what I think is a really interesting election 2020 dynamic that I've been just kind of reading up on and seeing and researching. It hits on this concept of the suburban lifestyle dream, I think was a way, and yes, I'll say where I read that, and you can take it with the grain of salt that you want to take it with, but the New York Times has had a couple interesting pieces on this. But all clocks are right twice a day, so I read everything. But people living this suburban lifestyle dream are not the suburban voters of the 60s. And this is just objective analysis. I don't have a horse in this race, in this conversation. But what's interesting is that I think that the presidential reelection campaign playbook is trying to recraft Nixon's first and second elections, his election as a candidate and then his election as an incumbent, and basically say, look, back then we had the same kind of race issues. We had the same kind of upheaval. Nixon ran on law and order. There seems to be an approach from the presidential reelection campaign to basically play that playbook again today. And I think the evidence of that is pretty clear. What's interesting, and this will be interesting to watch as the election plays out, is that the suburban voters of today are not the suburban voters of the 60s. And the same political strategy that worked for the suburban voters of the 60s is not the same political strategy that is able, I think, potentially to work today. And I bring this up because, and I'll be honest, this is not to be taken as a political statement across the board, but I was pretty troubled by a tweet that the president sent out last week where he undid some of President Obama's fair housing policy and basically said to suburban voters in no uncertain terms, I have saved your home property values and your way of life. You will now no longer be forced to have integrated housing. To me, that crosses a certain line that some other issues don't. But it comes back to this idea that suburban voters care less about race issues or are monolithic. And time is running out. So what I want to do is finish this up. I want to get to the phone lines. I want to do more on this topic because I don't want to just leave it here. But what we do know is that suburban voters are deeply troubled and supportive of some of the issues around race and culture that we're seeing. Suburban voters today are not the suburban voters of the 60s. And most suburban voters, according to the polls, we'll see if the polls play out, are actually disapproving of Trump when it comes to at least the handling of some of the racial upheaval. The other thing that we're finding, and again, I'll do more on this topic later, less time than I wanted to touch on this, is that there is this assumption that the suburbs are monolithic culturally. And the data shows that it's a stereotype. Our suburban areas are very diverse, more diverse than we give them credit for. And also, our suburban areas are more highly educated. And so we've seen highly educated female voters specifically lean very Republican in past years. We're seeing them start to fall a little bit away in the polls from the president. And so, again, this is an objective analysis. We've covered a lot of the Biden campaign. I want to touch on this and get your thoughts. I'll get to your phone lines in just a second. But I think there's a huge play for the suburban vote. And I'm not sure that the president's election team is going at it the right way, because I think that the demographics and the interests of the suburbs have shifted beyond what they're given credit for. There's data to back that up. We'll see what the polls say. I will agree that there are what I call a silent majority of people who are deeply troubled by both, I think, fringes of the party, by both the far left and both the far right. But I think that the Democratic Party is in many ways overplaying its hand. And I think suburban voters left with a choice. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But I wanted to raise this point. We are ticking around 3 minutes before the end of the hour. I want to get to Matt on line two. Matt, thanks for calling 790-2040. What do you think about all this?
Well, real quickly on the suburban plan, obviously Trump's plan is, excuse my language, to scare the Jesus out of voters with a very dark and disturbing ad. But given the current news, it wasn't a far stretch for him to do that. So I don't see it as being as effective as it normally would be to scare suburban voters. And that's suburban means moms and so forth, about safety and security. But it will reinforce his base, which he's you know, trying to hold on to. If it drops to 25% or below, you know, he's got a very serious problem. I'd like to really also discuss the issue with the University of Arizona. Probably the biggest decision point any university has done yet that I know of. President Robbins is really walked on a ledge here. While I applaud his audacity, the amount of attention this is going to get from regulators, both at the federal, state, and I mean specifically at the state. I mean, he has to, the Board of Regents. There's no discussion in this press release about the Board of Regents. I'm sure they're going to have to meet to discuss it. I'm very skeptical of this decision, and they're going to have to explain how they got there. There was no community involvement at all.
Matt, I appreciate the call as always. I'm ticking down to about a minute, and I wanted to address something that you mentioned. I think you're absolutely right. I think this is going to be a struggle from faculty. It's going to be a struggle from, you know, regulators who have been looking at for-profit universities for a while. With what I've read and seen just today, and there's always going to be more information coming out, I think you're right. But I think the university has to push through. I mean, I think President Robbins' strategy, and he said it, is we could either grow our own farm team or we could go and look for free agents. And his decision has been to not grow the farm team because he's out of time to do it, quite frankly. His strategy has been to basically go out and purchase a model that exists. And I think if there's nothing in the pale on this, I think it's a good move. Tucson, we're going to be back tomorrow, a full hour of final predictions and forecasts for the primary election. That is tomorrow. So join us same time, same place here on Tipping Point. Zach Yenser signing out. Stay healthy, Tucson.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.